Okay. Hold on. So we had a few people. We had a few people leave. Well, that's fine. Okay. So if anyone, if no one has any questions about that, I want to just ask, I want to just bring something to the floor. And it's about our community. It's about the collective, not the collective, because there's a few of us that do, but we seem to have like this general lack of responsibility and accountability in our community. And I want to get some feedback from people on this, because what I notice is no matter what someone does, let's just say a black person does, if a man is carrying himself like an ass, there's bound to be someone who's saying, oh, that poor baby, he just don't know better or whatever. And, you know, I'm of the mind that if you're a man, you have to be responsible. You have to be held accountable for your actions, because that's the only way we're going to get better. I'm tired of people making excuses for poor behavior. So, you know, maybe everyone doesn't agree with me. If you're on the opposite side if you have an opposite opinion, then, you know, press star 6. Let me know what you think. Hello? Okay, so we're not getting that much engagement tonight, so this is going to be a short call. Hold on, we have Brother Bobby in the queue. Brother Bobby.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Peace.
So I guess I need a little bit more clarification about your question when you say misbehaving or being unaccountable or acting like an ass. I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that. That's kind of broad. So could you give us like a better example?
All right. So there was this video of this kid. He went in to go rob a store, and they locked him in the store. And, you know, he was begging and pleading to get out of the store, right? It's comical. I'm saying to myself, all right, you're an idiot. You go to rob a store. First of all, you shouldn't be robbing a store. There's just some people who are saying, you know, excusing his behavior. Just some of our people just excusing his behavior. This happens, you know, with a lot of different topics. These young men running around with their pants hanging, with their whole ass hanging. It's craziness to me, but there are people who excuse that type of behavior. They're making excuses for it. And I think because we don't pull people's coat, because we are excusing poor behavior, is the reason why we are like being disrespected so much by other ethnic groups, even by ourselves.
I see what you're saying. So, I mean, I have complicated emotions towards that. I think there are ways in which the politics of respectability can be used to, how do I say, further subjugate people who are already subjugated. For example, you know, white kids, the skater kids who wear their pants down, or they wear the tight skinny jeans that are designed not to cover their but completely, nothing happens to them. No one says anything to them. They're just allowed to, you know, be kids and identify with their heroes. So, like, my dad told me to pull up my pants. I would tell my kids to wear their pants up. But the point of departure is when you use these things that are, you know, sort of kids sort of identifying with their heroes to, you know, like bring serious consequences against kids. So, for example, the Obama administration did, you know, that study where they found that black kids in schools were suspended at a much higher rate and for much longer periods of time than white kids with the same sort of infraction, the same sort of discipline infraction. And so when the punishment is racialized, then that is concerning for me, particularly when, you know, there are no consequences for the white kids. And we just have to call that racism. And I think instead of putting the onus on, you know, kids to not be kids or to not, you know, identify with their hero or not to, you know, do what's not popular, I think the real consequence should be on, you know, adults and the school system to sort of not be racist, you know what I'm saying? The same thing is true for, you know, criminal justice. If, you know, a kid gets caught stealing something, then that doesn't mean that the kid should die. It's not the police responsibility to be the judge, jury, and executioner. That black young man deserves an opportunity to have his day in court. He deserves to be innocent and until proven guilty like every other American. So I'm kind of, when it comes to, you know, the politics of respectability and how we sort of judge people on sort of by how they dress or how they present themselves or where they're from, it bothers me. And I'll give one more example, then I'll be quiet. If you remember Steve Jobs, who was like the CEO and founder of Apple, he one of the first things the board did was bring in a group of people to convince him that it's appropriate to bathe every day. He needs to bathe if he's going to be around people because he didn't like to take a bath, right? And he was funky. And I think if Steve Jobs gets to be Steve Jobs, you know, dirty, funky, doesn't like to bathe, wearing the same pair of blue jeans and black shirt, he publicly and openly, you know, talked about his use of mind-altering drugs. If he gets to be all of those things and gets be Steve Jobs, then, you know, I think we have to be careful about sort of dismissing people who don't, you know, fit the mold of acceptability because, it's just tricky there. It's real tricky.
Okay, so you are on the side of trying to understand the individual situation and thinking of it on a case by case basis is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, more or less. And also within that, having giving people the freedom to be individuals and to be unique and to be expressive and, you know, not straight away write off people because they don't present themselves a certain way, because they don't speak the Queen's English or because they don't dress a certain way. They can still be
I'm really talking about behavior though. Because in my time, when I grew up, my mother didn't play that. My mother was like, you better not go out here and embarrass me. My father was the same way. And the other thing was, listen, you know, they'll be looking at you. You know it's not fair, so you have to be twice as good or you have to be on your P's and Q's. That's just what it was. That's just the way it was, and that's how people carried themselves at that time. And I think now what's going on is there's just the people are just making a lot of excuses for poor behavior. They're just letting anything fly. And, I mean, you see where it's getting us. But I I'm not going to disagree that you have to respect individuality. I'm not saying that no one can be an individual, but I think there needs to be some, I think it just needs to be like a code of conduct is what I believe. Because you rarely see anything about Asians, you know, acting crazy, being loud and stuff like that. Those that have become Americanized, yes, somewhat, but Asians, their parents are very, very strict with them when they're young. They, you know, and they're taught a certain way, and very few buck outside of that. Now, what they do when they're amongst themselves is something totally different, but when they're around others, you notice that they'll huddle together and they're very, very quiet, and they're actually taught a way to communicate that's a little, it's just respect. It's, they have a very respectful culture. That's, you know, to summarize. But thank you for weighing in, brother. Thank you for weighing in. We have, now we have a few people in the queue. There we go. All right, let's get it cranking. Is there anything you would like to add in summary, brother?
No, I would just point out that, I believe that behavior, like the way you respect, is important, and that should be a given. But when I asked for an example, you said, you know, the guys with their butts hanging out and the guy who robbed the store. So I tried to respond with examples that sort of, you know, address. But yes, on that, on the issue of respect, yes, absolutely, I think that's important. But, you know, respect doesn't look a certain way. It doesn't come from a certain place. It doesn't dress a certain way. It doesn't speak a certain way. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, brother. Next, we have Brother George in the queue. All right. So we got quite a few people. Go ahead, Brother George.
Yeah. I just want to pose a couple of questions in the context of your statement with regard to behavior, ineffective behaviors and mindset. I think that as black men, you know, we all have to deal with the experience of America. So one question that I would like to give people just to think about is, out of all of the quality of life categories, that is wealth, employment, education, public health and safety, any of the quality of life areas that we need to survive, not just, you know, wants, but the basics that we need to survive and thrive. Of any of those quality of life areas, which other cultural group do we statistically outperform in 2017? And just kind of think about that. And then ask yourself, why are we in that place at this stage of mind? And I would say it's all due to mindset. So, like, right now our political and social environment is very polarized. It is a conflict between white superiority and black inferiority. And we're always reacting to what we perceive the other guy is doing. And when you're reacting, you're losing. So it's our current condition, all the things that you stated in your question, is a reflection of our mindset, which is really leans, and regardless of whether we are broke or we're six figures, we still have that mindset where we will find the back door to come in. We're welcome to come to the front door, but in our mind, we always still try to find the back door because generationally, that has been bred into our community. That's been a strong survival tactic. How does that resonate with
you? Now, when you say the back door, what do you mean about that? What do you mean?
That means, you know, back in the day, we had to always come in the back entrance.
You mean physically, right? I get that physically, but I mean, so how is that?
So we still, as black men, and it's irrelevant of our degrees, of our socioeconomic status, we know subconsciously when we're in the room that we are probably the lowest in rank compared to other cultural counterparts in the same position. So, like, for myself as a mental health professional, most of the meetings I go into are primarily white female. So the white female, but the population I'm serving is primarily black males. But the decision makers in the system that I'm working in are white females. So when I come in into the room as a black male who knows my children better than any of these supposedly educated white females, and this is not to be against white. I'm not saying this from a racism standpoint, although it is about racism. I'm not using the militant black perspective. I'm saying it is what it is. That my view is going to be considered lesser than compared to theirs. And I know that when I come in. And I'm sure a lot of you can share similar experiences in your field if you're competing with the same folks in your positions or in your companies. You have to do the extra little fight to get that respect.
And you're saying having that mindset is the cause for us having a lack of accountability and and responsibility for our actions?
That's right.
Like yesterday.
It's an actual clinical term. The clinical term is called learned helplessness. When you get a chance, Google the term, and it applies to any type of trauma-victimized population. And after so many experiences of being told no, of not being reinforced for who you are, of being physically beaten or mentally harassed, at some point you mentally make a shift because that's all your experiences are telling you. And it becomes internalized. You watch TV, you listen to the music, all of these media things, messages that are coming at you, it's something you have to continually battle. And so at a certain point, you begin to do your oppressor's work for him because you have internalized the message he wants you to believe.
So how will you reverse this? I mean, my solution is the babies, but is there a way to reverse those of us who are affected and older?
Yes, because you can always unlearn something you learned. The mind is very pliable. It's very flexible. It's an amazing machine, but it takes the first step in any problem-solving solution is to be aware that you have that problem.
Right.
Because if you're not even going to acknowledge it, that the possibility of it exists, then you have no hope of trying to reverse or change or intervene.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, brother. Is there anything else you want to add in summary? That's great.
No, I would just be curious as to feedback to that premise because I know it kind of shakes people's mindsets up when I put it that way.
Okay. Well, we got quite a few people in the queue, so, you know, I guess they'll weigh in, I guess. Thank you so much, brother.
Okay.
All right. Sister Rhonda. Hello? Oh, Sister Rhonda?
Oh, I'm sorry. Good evening, everyone. I'm sorry. I just got off with another call. It's Thursday night, so it's kind of busy for me. But I was going to digress, but what the brother just said, I can understand and relate to what he's saying as far as that, but I have to agree with you. And not because your brother Lewis, because the experience that you had, I had also. We emulated what was in our home. We were told, you know, you don't go out, you don't embarrass me, you don't touch, you don't put your hand on nothing when we're in the store. And we just knew that you didn't do it because it was against the protocol. You don't do something. So for me, I have to agree with you. I think that the only way we'll get to it as a collective, because in reality, we're all in different regions, and all of us have not had that same experience. The only thing we'll be able to do is do it through the babies. And that's all I have to say about that.
Thank you so much, Sister Rhonda.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Now we have Sister Kim.
Good evening, Brother Lou. Can you hear me?
You are low, sister.
Low down.
Huh?
Okay, can you hear me now?
Much better, yep, much better.
Okay. Well, sitting here thinking. Well, good evening, everyone. I saw that video and bless his soul. Just bless his soul. But, you know, thinking about it, I understand what the previous gentleman was just saying. And I hear what you're saying because I grew up in that generation, too, that, you know, we went in the store, we got that prep talk before we went in there. And thankfully that, you know, my kids, they listen. You know, before we go in the store, don't touch nothing, don't pick up nothing, don't ask nothing. You know, we're going in, we're coming out. But then you got some people that, you know, what about those that they weren't taught like that? and, you know, they have babies. And so, you know, if you have someone that's producing, someone that doesn't know any better, and then they're having such a hard time, because you got some people that still live in rural areas that their products they put you in the mind of the movie Get Out. Really, you got
right,
some people
right.
that yeah. still stuck back in those days. So how do you reach out to those people and those people that aren't current, and it blows their mind if they just go to a city that's, you know, a little bit bigger, 30 miles out of the way. But you got some people that have a mentality where, you know, I'm going to get it by any means necessary, just like, you know, the previous caller was saying. You know, their mind is made up. Well, they're not going to let me have it. And I hate to hear some people say, you know, well, and no, I'm not being racist when I say it, but I'm just repeating what some of us say. Well, you know, them white folks ain't going to let me have it, no way. Well, you know, I think a lot of it is in your mental. You know, if you want better, you'll do better. You know, you're getting tired of being broke. You know right from wrong. You know it's wrong to go in and take something that does not belong to you. And you got to have that mentality, too, that, you know, I know how if I'm an owner of a store or if I'm working so hard for something that I have and somebody comes, it can be my house. You can come in my house and take something. And some people will beat you to the white meat
mm-hmm.
because they worked so hard for what they have. You know, that's just my two cents.
Thank you so much, sister. I appreciate you weighing in.
All righty.
Now we have Brother Will. Brother William H.
Hi, everybody. You know, I really, really was thinking about the question that you posed. Brother George really hit the nail on the head in the sense that the mentality has to be changed. But I think also you, in posing your question, raised a very valid point that, you know, at what point or how do we inject responsibility into people that are not willing to listen. You know, when we began talking about working with the children, well, that's the level we're probably going to have to reach them at, because if the teenagers and the 20-somethings, they don't respect the people that are above them. And I'm not saying that all the people above them are respectable all the time, but how do you reach people that don't want to hear you? And another thing I think that our children or our young people don't understand is they've been lured into a false sense of security, forgetting that this is a racist society that we live in. And they think, well, it's okay for me to do a certain thing because that group does that certain thing. You know, as the first person that came on the call with a question or wanted to talk about the subject that you posed was saying, well, we don't want to condemn a certain behavior or certain, you know, like wearing your pants halfway down your behind and things like that, you know, because, you know, the white kids can do it. Well, we live in a society. I think it's very important that we, you know, we can't stress this hard enough, that this society is not equal. It's racist. And because of that, you didn't grow up thinking that you could get away with everything a white kid could get away with, did you? So we shouldn't go up thinking like that. I'm going to get away with everything a white kid get away. No, you're going to get shot, and he's going to get a ride home. So we have to, you know, get our kids back to thinking about, you know, where we're at, what kind of society we live in, and really, until we do, we're going to keep losing them because they're thinking, oh, well, I should be able to do this, and I should be able to do that. And as far as role models go, you know, the role models that they're choosing are the role models that are not going to help them secure any type of future. You know, nobody's going to get paid to walk around with their pants halfway down their behind. You know, if you're trying to make a fashion statement, well, you know, I mean, we all growing up had different ways that we dressed and things like that's just part of the teenage thing. I understand that. But at some point, you knew how to clean up if you wanted to go get a job. You knew how to go get an interview because you were taught. You knew how to, you know, to talk to people when it was time to go make some papers. So we, you know, our young people have to understand that, you know, we have to be sharp. And one of the disadvantages we have is if you go to any large city, you're going to always find a Chinatown. And you go to other cities, you're going to find this, and you're going to find where people kind of have community. Well, we're trying to, that's what this organization is trying to do. We're trying to bring back a sense of community because that's what's lost. And when we have a sense of community, then we're going to have a little bit more control over how our community functions. But as long as we're all going in different directions, you know, it's like we can just get picked off one at a time. So, you know, that's basically what I wanted to say.
Thank you so much for weighing in, brother.
And, my pleasure.
We have Sister Mai. Sister Mai.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sister.
Okay, no, fuck me. Good evening, everyone. Great questions, great feedback so far, and I appreciate the question. I agree that we need to have accountability and that many of us do make excuses and allow bad behavior, questionable behavior, dishonorable behavior, whatever kind of behavior that is unfavorable to both the person that's exemplifying that behavior as well as the victim or whoever, basically whoever they're portraying that behavior towards. And too many of us stand by as bystanders and don't say anything about it either. And I think there's several reasons for that. The main one, I believe, is the children raising children, the whole, you know, crack epidemic and basically when, with the destruction of the labor, of the family, the nucleus of the Black family, be it just the single moms or the fathers being taken out of the neighborhood for whatever reason, death, jail, drugs, whatever, it allowed the family structure, well, those that were left to be more vulnerable and to get these other types of heroes, as Brother Bobby called them, and start to emulate people that displayed alternative behavior than what they were taught at home, or contrary to what they were taught at home, because what they are seeing glorified and flashed in front of them, which I think is also systemic and it was done on purpose by the Jewish media, that would only put out, you know, you basically couldn't get airtime or get a record deal or whatever, and be signed with a major label or get great distribution unless you were putting out buffoonery and nonsense. And I saw that firsthand. People that were talented without a gimmick, just truly talented or trying to put out good, you know, wholesome, for lack of a better word, music, were being turned away left and right. They wanted the gang glorifying type of music to, you know, to be portrayed in our communities, and it worked. And I believe that those people became heroes, quote unquote, because they saw those people getting paid. Period. It was like, it's like all about money. If this is what it takes to come up, so to speak, to go from rags to riches without a degree, without, you know, going to school and doing it the proper way, working hard, doing it the way my parents, you know, told me, or the way I see them breaking their back every day and we're still in this impoverished neighborhood, then I'm going to also smoke, drink, rap, wear my pants like that, do whatever to get paid. And that's really unfortunate, and it's the power of the media, I believe, plays such a huge part in the mindset that we have. And it's played a huge part on those of us that are not necessarily in that era or generation where we are mesmerized or enticed by that type of behavior or that culture, the saggy pants, rap, you know, being drunk and high and all that, acting stupid. But so then we have these other images, however, that are constantly, you know, to grasp a different audience that may be middle class or think they've arrived or that are suburban or whatever. But then you're seeing, when you see black people as quote unquote successful on television, you're seeing more men in dresses, more gay people. And I know this isn't a platform for that. This is just, you know, lifestyle is lifestyle, your choices are your choices, and everybody is entitled. But I'm just saying there's still things that traditionally in the black community were considered immoral or behavior that shouldn't be, and where they're glorifying single parenthood and relationships that don't involve the two-parent home, period. And they're also showing you, or there's a lot of the narrative out there is so focused on, I feel, we're bombarded with so many images of successful black women being successful alone, being single and not needing a man. And it's again, to the demise, I think, of our race, of our culture. And, you know, I don't know that I necessarily agree. I actually agree with your statement that I don't know that we'll necessarily be extinct, but I think it is very, very plausible that we will be unnecessary, unneeded, if we keep going down this vein. And I also agree that it is us that have to make the change ourselves. We have to get back to caring. We have to be okay with standing up to a young mother who will cuss you out for saying something to their kid or questioning their behavior because they don't know any better. They basically, you know, and that's, I think, what happened a lot with the teachers that used to bring corrective action somewhat, at least word, you know, verbally to children who were acting out. They started getting, you know, jumped on literally sometimes, but cussed out a lot by these younger moms, single mothers going into the school. What did you say to my kid? Why did you tell my kid that they can wear what they want, do what they want, on and on? So the teachers were like, oh, okay, well, if that's how you, you know, allow your kid to act at home, then you're right. Who am I? I can't say anything to your child. You know, I can't put my values in your home, you know, if you don't have them. So, I'm sorry.
No, I said right.
I'll wrap it up.
Right.
Oh,
I remember there being an incident. I remember there being an incident specifically. Yeah, I think the mother went to school and actually beat up the teacher.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, because the mother... Because the mother was excusing mm-hmm. poor behavior, you know, excusing the poor behavior of her child. And
exactly.
I mean,
it happens a lot.
It does.
I was in the school system for several years when my daughter was in school. So, you know, I just see the apathy that a lot of teachers have. There are still people who care and can't, but then they go look at the parents. And like they say, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, so you can't really fault the child. But I did have a question for Brother George. He mentioned that, I don't know if it's a syndrome or whatever, but he said to look up, it was called learned something. And I wanted to get
learned
that second word because
learned,
I do.
Learned helplessness, I believe.
Learned helplessness. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And well, without looking it up, which I will do, just the symptoms itself make sense. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. It's totally true. I believe that. We don't need necessarily them anymore to condemn us, to murder us, to destroy us, because we are definitely doing it to ourselves. We have learned that behavior from them very well on how to act in a way that it brings demise onto our own community and our own cultures. And, you know, like they say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Like when they infiltrated our communities with drugs and guns, it's like the saying would be, you know, we can put them there, but it doesn't mean you have to use it. But unfortunately, that didn't happen, right? So this is where we are, and it's a good call, and it's a tall order. The mission and goals that this that Black Lives Matter has, but I believe it's definitely worth it. I agree that we have to start with babies and just start over and get enough like-minded people to start the ball rolling. And I just believe that once we do, once, like someone else said, once you see someone successful that you know, someone or someone becoming successful that you know or doing something that they may be afraid or uninterested in trying, but then they see that example and they see it become successful, then they'll get on board. So I think that it'll just become a snowball and, you know, hopefully pick up momentum. And I just hope that people listening will join tonight and help us get this movement started, because I'm on board and I think it's a great one. It's, there's, to me, there's no greater legacy than we can leave, and there's no greater need. And I thank you for trying to fulfill it. I appreciate you, Brother Lewis.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Sister Ma. Now we have Brother Leon. Brother Leon.
Okay. So can you hear me, Brother Lou?
Yes, I can.
Yes, sir. Well, I so far enjoyed the call, and it's got a lot of interesting points. And but getting back to the question and the topic, what I was looking at, the question was really answered in the beginning when you started off talking about the vision, the dream, okay, of what a community resource center can do. So by establishing that's painting a picture, and that's a real, say, serious part of the puzzle. So by having that, then we can proceed with the question. And then the question was touched on with the brother with the clinical background. What he said was basically the same thing Mrs. Tutman said. She said she could have freed a lot of people if they knew they were slaves. Okay, so basically, lack of knowledge, my people perish because of lack of knowledge. Okay, so basically, okay, the situation we're in right now is that we know we can train the kids, we see the problems with the kids. So, but by them not having the knowledge, well, that's the problem. So by having that picture that you stated earlier, that's a dream. Okay, that's something that can be done, and it only takes just so many people to do it. It only takes 20% of the population that would to elect the president. So, you know, by having people us moving in that manner of doing one school, we paint a picture. Now, going a little further with that, I look at hip-hop. Okay, this is what they did successfully. Okay, not why they did it, but this is what they got accomplished. They painted a picture. Okay, and what happened is the people brought into that picture because why? It showed them how to make money. And what it was, the picture they painted was knowledge on how to make money in today's society with what you got. That's so you have knowledge, then you have learned knowledge. Once you learn knowledge, you can teach knowledge. So what happened here, hip-hop was used, okay, it was a result of, you know, of a community being attacked from various areas, destroying the family, and that put guns with drugs, so that left us what the residue was hip-hop. So hip-hop painted a picture, so the knowledge that was received from our youth was that you could do this, okay, and make money. So that was the knowledge that picture was painted so pretty till they brought, they said, oh, I can do that. And when you have knowledge, okay, you have, then the next thing is learn knowledge. And after you have learned knowledge, you have taught knowledge. Well, taught knowledge is what happened. The hip-hop, you know, did what it had to do. Okay, so the kids were, hey, I can do my clothes any kind of way. I can respect this person as a hero because what? They making money in my world. Okay, now at the same time, okay, once it was happened, that was the picture that was painted. So now getting the responsibility is back to us. Okay, now, you, and again, going back to what you said earlier, with that community resource center, what that does is that, okay, this is something us on the call, we can do. Okay, so now what we just did was took the artist's brush and we began to paint a picture. Now, all the attributes that we have here on the call, we could be a part of painting that picture, and when that picture is painted, now we're in a position where what? Okay, they have a choice, okay, because why we create the option. So just to answer the question, I felt it was answered with, you know, with the statement you made on having the resource center, and then it was confirmed with Ms. Tutman said basically, okay, she could have freed more had they known. And the Word of God say, well, my people perish because of lack of knowledge. So just knowing that these are realities, these are things that our culture was based on when I was raised up. Okay, so So this is what is real, and this is what things that we can do. That resource center, we can do that. Once that happened, we create options. And then, like this conversation here, has went a lot of different ways, but it was all positive. Okay? Okay, why? Because we are the option to not doing nothing. Okay, so now creating that center, okay, in the process of doing that, it's going to create other options. So I think the question was answered with, that's just me now, with the community center, and then Ms. Tupper saying that what, lack of knowledge. If they only knew their condition, they would have did better. So that means that they had to be taught. And so, and again, getting back to hip-hop, it was formed through what happened in our communities, and that was the thing, well, hey, if I do this, I can make money. So that was the picture that they saw, and they said, well, you know what, I'm going to do that because that's my knowledge of making money. And then once you have knowledge, it could be, we have, from that point, is learn knowledge. From learn power, learn knowledge, you're going to be able to teach what you learn. So I just wanted to kind of throw that in. And that was it, Brother Lou.
No, I said right. I get it. You're saying that once we paint this picture, that will provide the knowledge that would give them the picture that would, and then the community resource center where we would be able to educate the babies and, you know, basically educate the community. We would be able to disseminate the knowledge that, you know, that they need. So mm-hmm. Man, I thank you so much, Brother Leon.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have Brother Leonard, Brother Bobby, and Brother George. Brother George is back in the queue. I guess he's going to really explain a little bit more. Brother Leonard.
All right, how you doing, Brother Lou?
Peace, Brother. Peace, how are you?
Peace. Not bad. Hey, all of the comments that I'm hearing on the call were all absolutely correct. As Harriet Tubman said, if she knew that they were slaves, we could have freed more. But there's something else as far as the media is concerned. When we were coming up, Lou, much of the music was based on social consciousness, stop the war, what's going on, my brother, save the children. I mean, Curtis Mayfield, James Brown, that's was the temper of the community at the time. When hip-hop hit, they only talked about what was going on in their life, okay? They didn't talk about the consciousness of the world. They're talking about what's going on in their personal life. Now, having said that, when I was coming up, I was forbidden to watch certain cartoons and certain programs. Like, I was forbidden to watch Amos and Andy because my father would always tell me that's a bunch of buffoonery, okay? So we couldn't watch it. I knew of Amos and Andy, and yes, did I sneak to see it when he wasn't at home? Yes, I did. But I knew that it was wrong. Many of these kids today don't know what they're doing is wrong. Anytime that you're going to degrade our sisters like the way they do and talk about taking out another brother, bag it up, drop it like it's hot. Gin and juice, even going back to Snoop Dogg, they made money, but the people that were in charge of promoting the business gave them the money and they bought it. Now, we understand that. Now, this generation that we have that's going to become senior citizens, they're going to be in their 50s and 60s, they don't know what we know. That's why it's imperative that what you're doing, brother, that we all really, really get behind. And I'm saying that to say that to everybody that's on the call. And this is going to be a hard-fought battle because I know that based on what you're doing and the need in our community, we should have a million people. People should be begging you to join. What can I do to help? But having said that, we're making good strides now. There's a lot of people on this call, men and women, that have a skill set to make the difference. But I do strongly suggest that we begin to go after the baby boomers. Every brother, especially the black men, really need to step up. That was born in 1945 to 1955, to start with the leadership to support. Second thing is, we do need to hit all these different generations. We need the leadership of Generation X. We need the leadership of Generation Y. And you know we got to work with these millennials. And then I don't know what they're going to call the generation that you're talking about with the resource center. So 20 years from now, when those kids are 9 years old, I don't know what they're going to call them. They may call them baby slaves. Hope not.
It's looking crazy. Yeah, it's looking
right,
really
crazy. So you know how my position is on that. But everybody on the call, this is what we need to focus on and get behind. Your blueprint is tight. And if you haven't went to the blueprint, check the blueprint before you say anything else or when you get on the call. But, again, I just want to tell you, I enjoyed you on the other call the other night. You're doing great work, and we're all behind you. But we can't just sit up here and talk. We got to roll up our sleeves.
I'll tell you one of the biggest things. You just said the baby boomers. Right, so I'm Generation X, but you're 100% right, because I do speak to a lot of older, a lot of elders, let me put it that way, and they are concerned. They are seriously concerned about what's going on. And they were part of a movement. I don't know if you are in that age group, but
oh yeah, I'm 65.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, so you guys witnessed movements, powerful movements, the whole civil rights thing, and then you guys also were part of the time where there was just respect in the community. And I say this all the time. I'm like, you guys were closer to slavery than we were. So how were you guys better mannered and had more community vibe and all of this? Now, as Sister Mai said, and I know this, I know that was the turning point, because I remember the turning point before my eyes. Excusing, right? So having that internal compass of what's right and what's wrong, the way how men are treating women now, for let's say that guy's uncle or somebody else or another brother standing there, for you to excuse that behavior, for you not to pull this gentleman's coat, for you not to tell him, hey, listen, bro, that's wrong. Like, that should be, I think, like, something like that should just be, like, instinctive. I do it too. When I'm out and I see young brothers, getting a little loud and rowdy and things like that, I'll pull them to the side. And I'm not disrespectful, but I'm like, yo, listen, bro, you know, people watching you. If something go down the wrong way and the cops come, who's the first person they gonna come? Who's the first people there? All right, so you can sit and do all of this, but if you clinked up, what's gonna happen? Your mother got bail money for you? You got money for a lawyer? No. I just tone it down. Be mindful of your surroundings. Be mindful of things. This is how you talk to. Well, this is how I talk and try to be accountable for be my brother's keeper, so to speak. And try to educate and communicate when I'm in the barbershop and we see some of these young guys in there. So, in my shop, if there's women there, no cursing, none of the rowdy talk or whatever it is, whatever we maybe talk about, tone it down. If there's kids in there, absolutely shut it down. But when there's those young guys in there with pants hanging down and all of this stuff, and I mean, when I was younger, I used to pants sag too, not like them, but, had a little sack. I asked them and I engaged them. And I really, what I'm thinking is, because I'm trying to understand what the solutions are, and I'm saying, if you had an opportunity to go and learn to do something, like, how are you doing in school? How are you doing with your grades? I'm trying to discern, is this a person who's into academia, or is this someone who may be good with his hands, right? There's some brothers who are brilliant, but they're not, either the parents don't know what to do with them, or the school doesn't have a facility or whatever it is to help them where they need help to propel them. But then there's a whole lot of these young guys that can do some really creative, amazing things working with their hands. If we were to take those guys and put them into, you know, something, those are our resources. Those are the things that we have to work with. I said this a few weeks on a call, and I'm going to say it again. We have human capital. Black folks love to be all proud. Oh, we're so brilliant. We're so smart. We're so creative. We're so this. Okay, let's harness that, because it doesn't make sense, because right now the only people benefiting on that, like Sister Maya said, the Jewish media, white basketball, you know, white team owners, and, you know, all of this stuff. They're the only ones actually benefiting from it in mass. So, you know, I mean, like I said, I mean, thank you, brother. We got a ways.
Just open up the left door, the left side. It's thick.
Oh, yeah. he's at work. Okay, brother, I'm gonna go to the next caller. Thank you so much, man, for chiming in, brother. Okay, brother Bobby, and then brother George.
Hi, this is Bobby. Can you hear me?
Peace, brother. Yes.
Okay, awesome. So, first of all, thank you guys for your comments and for this very rich conversation. I just want to clear up something that I said earlier. I think there are two things that it's important that we not conflate them, right? There's bad behavior, or what some people may label as bad behavior or untraditional behavior, unacceptable behavior, and then there's the response to that behavior, right? So, for example, if black students and white students are committing the same offense, and then they get expelled, and black students are getting expelled more for the same offense as white students, then to me that is racist. And I think we have to be careful not to judge the black students and say, oh, well, they should be, you know, pull up their pants more, they should be a little bit more respectful, they should talk a certain way, as opposed to calling out the system as being racist, right? Because when we do that, when we rally to the side of, when we sort of justify the system by saying, you know, black people don't behave well enough, then to me that seems like we're doing the work of white racism or white supremacy, right? You have black males speaking racist things. And I just want to point out a few things. So there's this study from the University of Arizona where they looked at employment practices. So what they did was the professors there sent out fake resumes to Fortune 500 companies, and they would have everything on the resume be the same except race, right? And so what they determined is that black men with a criminal record were less likely, without a criminal record, right? So guys like the guys on this phone call were less likely to get a call back for an interview than white men with a criminal record, right? But you can turn that around and say, oh, black people aren't, they're not getting a job because they have their pants down, or because they're criminals, or because they use drugs, or all these other things, as opposed to calling out structural and institutional racism, is sort of what I'm trying to say. There were just another
well,
thing.
I appreciate the clarification. So let me just say this. This is a thought. I was having a discussion with a sister yesterday. Right? You said the system. Right? And you said, and like, you know, no one denies the fact that there's racism. No one, I think, denies the fact that it's systemic or systematic racism. What I and the sister were discussing yesterday was, we all, if we know this, and, you know, it's their system. It's their, they built it. They built the schools. They built the job. They built the system. We're integrated, or we're trying to get integrated, or we're trying to be involved, or whatever it is. If we're trying to get into that system, then we have to play by their rules. And so if us going in there, right, so we, it's like how Brother Will just said, we can't do the same thing that the white kids do. That's the whole purpose of the fight. That's the whole purpose of the cause of the movement. That's what we're angry about. But it is what it is. Just because it is, that doesn't mean that we act like we don't know the rules of the game. Because if you actually know the rules of the game, that's one of their benefits. That's one of their little booby traps. Oh, okay, let's make them think. This bugged me out my whole entire life. I used to hear black, watch Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, whoever else, and they always saying the fight for equality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, equality? Equal? I was like, okay, well, how many of us are here? And I think at that time we were like 10% or 9% of the population when I was little. I was like, well, how are we going to be equal if we're only 9% of the thing? And then I start digging into like some other numbers, and right, so you know they got like the Industrial Revolution, right? And then I think the peanut guy, whoever our peanut guy is, he was like in there somewhere. Then you had the who was the peanut guy?
Carver.
Carver, right? Right. But that was in one of their labs. That was like with that kind of funding. And then you had the Tuskegee thing, right? But that was in a negotiation and with the support of other white people, of their money. So this is me as a child thinking to myself, well, it's not, we don't have the same numbers. And then it seems like those things that they're teaching about that they do mention in American history, it's like it didn't come unless they participated or they contributed some money or whatever. I was like, well, what about outside of them? What's something that they didn't contribute? And then that's when I like kind of sort of like start falling in love with Malcolm X and, all of that stuff. But now when we're talking about how we really can make things happen in this, in this world across the planet, because they have taken the system and the power that they have here in America and have systematically enslaved the world now. They're just going around from place to place enslaving everyone. So they're really that good at implementing the system. But what happens is there are loopholes, right? There are loopholes for people to come up, to come into power, and then there are loopholes for people to gain control and respect and protect their own. Because if you look at what happened with China, if you look at Japan, right, you look at Russia, you look at Germany, these places were conquered. These places were conquered, but now America respects their handle. And then they come to the country and they're able to do what they want to do. If you look at how the Jewish community was persecuted here in America, and then now how they are in power, the strongest economic group, and they are the smallest number. The Jews aren't asking for equality. They are asking for dominance. They're not even asking. They're taking. They're taking dominance. The Asians, they're not asking for equality. They're coming here to dominate with small numbers. Someone asks who's below us on the socioeconomic totem pole. The only people are the Native Americans, the people who were here when everybody got here. Those are the only people below us.
Right.
The Latinos have met us, and they have surpassed us. And I was on another call like with Sister Mai, and they were talking about Univision, the Spanish channel, the Spanish network. They brought the root. So, I mean, we got some challenges ahead, to address your thing, I'm not saying that the racism doesn't exist, and I understand what you're saying, but I just think that like the way that I was raised,
right,
we're going to have to be held to a higher standard because it's not fair, and we know it's not fair, so let's not act like we don't. That's how my mom's raised.
That's okay, and that's the crux of my, I guess, our where we kind of see things differently, because I agree with everything that you just said, and I so believe in economic empowerment. I believe that's the only way that we're going to change things is through, we're not asking people for a job. We have companies and corporations and businesses where we can employ our own people and put politicians in office and lobbyists and that sort of thing. So we're on the same page there. Mm-hmm. I guess the question is, from where do we start? And I think we should start, we have to start by acknowledging the humanity of all black people, whether they behave the way we want them to behave or not. So look, my dad is a preacher, right? All I know mm-hmm. is holiness, because that's how I was raised. They forced that. They taught that. I'm with you on all those things, right? But I'm not going to do the work of a white supremacist by saying if, you know, some kid was shot because he stole a pound cake from the store, well, that kid somehow deserves that, or that kid, I'm not going to dismiss that. It is racism, particularly if it's a black kid, particularly if it happens consistently, and particularly if there's no accountability for the officer for using, you know,
deadly force.
That's exactly. So
right. I'm not excusing that. Yeah, no, I'm not saying anything like that. I'm not saying anything extreme. I'm just saying the things along the way, right? So before the officer, before this is a recent wave of racially motivated police brutality.
But we have not had the technology to document it, right? So it's recently visible. It's more visible. But I think if you ask every person, they would have a friend, a neighbor, someone who they know before all of this has happened. Where, I mean, just the fact that we have to have a conversation with our kids. My dad had a conversation with me about, you know, how to interact when the police stops you so that you don't, you know, end up dead. That suggests that this has been going on for a while. It's just now that we see it more, in my opinion. But I think that we have to start from a place that acknowledges everyone's humanity, and particularly our brothers and sisters, and don't hold people to a standard that is unreasonable, because that in doing so, you sort of do the work of, you know, racism, of a white supremacist. And the other thing I wanted to say, because this, you know, Martin Luther King's birthday is right around the corner, so I don't know, well, I assume that everyone knows, but the first person who sat on a bus and refused to give her seat to a white person that we have documentation of is a person named Claudette Colvin. She was a young black girl, but she was unwedded, and she had a baby out of wedlock. And so when she contacted the NAACP, they did not take her case because they did not think she would be a good poster child for the civil rights movement. However, Rosa Parks, an elderly black lady, was. So that discrepancy right there just sort of shows you the ways in which respectability politics can sort of separate us. I mean, this young person was brave. She said no. She had all the courage and character that Rosa Parks did. Just because she made some life choices that were not necessarily consistent with what other people believed, she does not get the representation that Rosa Parks get. And that becomes a seminal moment in the civil rights movement. So, again, I'm just, you know, everyone has their value system. Just, like, be mindful of the ways in which we harness respectability politics, is what I'm saying, and be careful that we're not doing the work of white supremacists by holding black people to an unaccountable. That doesn't mean, I love when you said, when you see a person in the barbershop or you see a person out in public acting a fool, you pull them to the side and you counsel them. I love that. That doesn't mean we don't do those things, but, you know, we also have to call racism, and not excuse it because someone was not conforming to a certain standard, if that makes sense.
No, brother, listen, I'm going to tell you this. I love that you have a counterpoint. I love that you have a counter argument, and I love that you are able to express it so articulately.
because I am able to understand exactly what you're saying, right? So, I mean, it basically boils down to, like, listen, our people got enough pressure as it is. So, you know, you don't be the one adding pressure to. I understand. Listen, brother, I hear you. I feel you. Again, it's like how you said you were raised one way. You know, I was raised another way, too. My mother was, you know, it seemed like my community at that time, it was like, hey, listen, you know what it is. Act accordingly. So, but thank you, brother. I appreciate you. You've added a lot of, a lot of insight to that point.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. So now we have Brother George.
Yeah. So good stuff. I mean, everybody brought in some really powerful epiphanies and perspectives. I think the theme accountability, I would like to leave everybody with this to consider, that accountability should have these following three components. The first component is relationship. You can't correct without a connect. So the example that you used, Brother Lou, with regard to the young brother that you went to and just pull him off to the side, or the barbershop environment, those are relationship-based. When you create relationships, then those that you're trying to help are going to be more open and receiving of the knowledge you're trying to input. But without a relationship, telling them to put their pants up and don't do this and don't do that, they're not going to hear that from you because they don't know you. They may be even angry at you because you look like somebody that they're mad at. The second thing is update the strategy. Old school does not work on new school. The way it used to happen back in the day when mama took us to the store and daddy used to tell us that, see, it worked on us then, but this generation has been exposed to far too much information, far too much hypocrisy, far too much trauma. So you can't take the old template that used to work and expect it to work today. And then the third piece, which I think is the most important piece, is step up your mental game. This is a mental issue that we're dealing with. I'm going to read something off of a famous black psychologist, Dr. Bobby Wright, who created the first Afrocentric mental health center in Chicago, Illinois. And he coined the term menticide, M-E-N-T-A-C-I-D, menticide. And it was designed with the intent of exterminating the African after his indigenous mind state has been replaced with that of the Europeans. He also argues that one of the most powerful instruments in the process of menticide is the control of the opposing group's institutions or the power to significantly influence them. He also goes on to say that blacks have charismatic leaders and whites have institutions. So we really need to be aware that that's the system that we're in. And a few of the things you said there, Brother Lou, which things like it's their system. We have to play by their rules. Someone else said we can't do the same thing white kids do. See, those are all limiting and non-empowering belief systems that we all too often subliminally operate by. So I would pose some questions for you all to think about, and I put it like this. What's keeping us from making our own system? What's keeping us from creating our own rules to play by?
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you, since we're talking and it's like all family here, I'm going to, I'm going to just give you the real, right? Listen.
Okay.
All the money in the world, every single thing, I mean, except for Cuba, Russia, and North Korea, flows through these central banks, right? And the central banks are controlled by the Rothschilds, right? And every now and then we'll talk about this. Some people may be familiar with this. But every single thing, the whole game of the world is about money now. Since after this was in 18 something. So if you lived before the 1800s, you had a fair shot at being who you wanted to be and having your own community, your own thing. But when that the father of Rothschild dude, when he sent his scout over there to find out that Napoleon was going to lose, came back and suckered all them people in Britain and London when they thought England was going to lose. The stock market dropped. He brought all the stocks. They found out they won, and the stock went up. The whole England was the richest country at the time. They were all in his pocket. And when he implemented the Bank of England, the Federal or whatever it was called, the Royal Bank of England, which was the central bank, that first model, that became the end of a free world, right? So it's all economic enslavement. Slavery, the slavery that happened to us was a business deal. That's all it was. It was a business transaction,
right?
So when Woodrow Wilson, and now they tried to implement this Federal Reserve System here in America a few times. Andrew Jackson abolished it. He was the last one. He abolished it. But when Woodrow Wilson put this thing in place in 1913, and anyone who's interested to figure out how that happened, there's a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. So it was a representative from the Rothschild. That was this guy. I think his name was Paul Warburg. There's a bank called UBS Warburg. But Warburg, and he was actually Daddy Warbucks. He was the model for Daddy Warbucks. There was a guy, Senator Aldridge. There was a representative for Rockefeller and, you know, Carnegie, and then the other guy, Mellon or something like that. But anyway, when they instituted the Federal Reserve here, in America, which is not actually a federal, it's not a federal entity. It's privately owned. That's when everything became rigged, because every dollar that comes into existence it's poofed into existence, and it comes with a repayment. It comes with a guaranteed repayment of interest by the federal government, with the promise that the federal government is going to tax its people. What the Rothschild dude did when he told Paul Warburg, whatever this dude's name is, I think it's German or whatever. What he told him, he was like, the best creator of wealth or of money, you know, that makes these banks, these governments and all that, it's war. War is the thing that makes them, makes the government need to borrow the most amount of money, because that's when they needed to borrow money, right? That's when, in the past times when they needed a Federal Reserve, it was when we were fighting, you know, France and then fighting England and whoever else. They have figured out how to create conflict out of every single thing. Marriage, you beef with your wife and you get a divorce, that's money. Black, white, every Indians and Pakistani people, Arab this, whatever it is, every single conflict, the two political systems, you know, every single conflict that we have, It's a miniature war, not to mention the military-industrial complex, the actual war. And we can get into how that whole thing works, because that's still alive and well, right? They created a system to enslave all of us, and what the Rothschild dude did was say, hey, listen, I'm not greedy. You got to leave some money. You got to leave something on the table for the rest of the people. And then he taught the people the game. He's like, listen, you go and you capture your fragment of whatever market, whatever industry it is, and you enslave them. You make them, you become the lender to them. And our education system was created by Carnegie and Rockefeller, our public education system. And all of, and our private institutions of higher learning, they're all supported by rich white men who captured all their knowledge and who have the money for research and all of this stuff. These guys do exploratory thinking, and they have the money. You're in the medical field. You're in a psychology. You're in the mental thing. All the things you learn and know are from these guys just just having pretty much just a blank check and just able to spend thousands and, you know, millions of dollars just figuring out, hey, what does it mean? But it all goes back to those central banking systems. So when I tell you it's their system, I mean it's their system. Now, the Jewish people have figured out how to corner that. And then in 1945, they made some agreement with Britain or whatever it is, and that's how they got their little Israel, their little place. But it's their system. It is. When I say this, I'm not talking about with limited beliefs, because I have some really, really enormous.
I agree with you that it's their system. So, I'm not. But what I'm asking is, I know it sounds like a really unreal question, but I'm challenging it anyway. What is preventing us from creating
I ask myself this every day. Since when I figured out that's what that dude was doing, right? It's Nathan, right? It's N.M. Rothschild, but it's probably the father, and I can't remember the father's name. This dude arguably is the smartest man that ever lived, because we are all under his thumb. We are all, and it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter who you are, unless, like I said, China, and even still, because they still do trade. They even got China. We know how tight China is with their money, and they even have China. So we all, this dude, like I said, arguably the smartest dude that ever lived, because he's figured out a way to enslave humanity through debt. Everything right now is all about money. And when I was looking at the game that he taught the other people to tell them to try to get their little slices of industries, right? Rockefeller started off in oil. How did he wind up in banking? They taught him the game. He at that creature of Jekyll Island. I mean, well, at that meeting of Jekyll Island, the guy Warburg, who was a representative of Rothschild, he was telling them. He taught them the game. He put them onto it, and they went out and they started creating all these things. So when Carnegie and Rockefeller went out and said, hey, you know what? We're just going to create this public school system. We're going to just create this national a center of learning for all these people. They were able to dictate what it was that people were. They definitely wasn't going to teach people how to think like them. They taught them to work. Think about our lives. We get up and work 5 days a week and celebrate 2 days off. That's the system that these guys created. We taking a really long time. I got a lot of people in the queue. I mean, maybe I struck a nerve, but I'm sorry. But I like that you're saying challenge, because that's exactly how I came up with the blueprint. This is how I know this is the way that it works, because you have to create a system, and I'm gonna get off real quick. You have to create a system that where people are participating in the system, you're able to use the money to do the things that you need to do. Because that's what they did. They created a system, and if you pay toll, you pay your taxes, you buy a filter for your refrigerator. I had to buy one today. You buy a filter for your refrigerator. Part of that money is going to go to these dudes. What he got to do with the filter in my refrigerator? What did you ever see him, that old ugly guy? He's in London, Lord Rothschild. That dude is the puppet master of the freaking world, yo.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But what I'm asking is, isn't it possible for us to rise to that level?
No. Wow. Unless you're gonna go pull a Cuba. No, you gotta. The best we can do is like Jeff Bezos, the Saudis, or something like that. The best we can do is get our chunk out of that system, because if you try to have something outside of that system, then we either got to be like down with Russia or Cuba or something. And you see Cuba is coming around. Like, we need Africa. They're freaking boxing Africa in. We're going to need military in order to do it. That's it. And I'm talking about on a realistic perspective. I'm talking about from a realistic perspective. I'm talking about by the way that the world works. We have no military defense to do it.
Well, I hear your perspective, and many would probably agree with you. However, I just believe that the mere difference of pigmentation shouldn't be the limiting piece for us to say, well, we'll never be able to do what someone of a lighter hue can do. Because once you go to that, then you, once you start accepting that restriction, then you end up settling for other restrictions. So I would rather, you know, my father used to say, shoot for the stars, even if you only get to the moon. But shoot for the stars.
No. Shoot for the stars. So that way, even if you fail, you get moon dust. Hey, brother, listen. I believe that. But guess what? Your father taught you that. You know why? Because he learned that from a system that one of these dudes created. I'm telling you, man. I probably have one of the broadest minds of a person you have ever met. But I am telling you, I can't. No one has figured out a way around this guy. No one in China, Russia, and North Korea and Cuba are the only three, and they still have to be part of it because they do trade and they need stuff.
Let me drop a name to you that I want you guys to look at. If you all are on Facebook, there is an initiative that this brother in England. I'm sorry. His name is Dean Okai, D-E-A-N, O-K-A-I, and he's doing exactly what I'm proposing in our discussion over there in that part of the world. Just go.
Is he using British pounds or the euro? What currency is he using?
I want you all to get on Facebook or just Googling DEANOKAI and check out the model, the template he's created. And then let's bring that back for discussion or throw something out in a group email or something when you catch your findings on it. It's heavy stuff. And I would really be curious to get you and Will's perspectives on what this brother is starting over there.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Yeah, we got, oh, man, the board is lit up, bro. All right. Hold on. All right, cool. I'm sorry. Sister Ma, yeah. I'm sorry. I know we took long, but please be mindful because we got the board is lit up. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. This is a great segue, actually, into my next comment. I've actually thought about that and stated to a few of my friends more than once about having our own, literally like our own country, or if we were even just able to have our own state within inside of America and have not be bombed like, you know, like Oklahoma, Tulsa, right? If they would, and again, it's they, anyway, leave us alone and actually allow us to be to ourselves and create our own currency. We could have our own language, our own dress, our own everything. I think we would be extremely successful. But I'm in agreement with you that they won't allow that, unfortunately, I think, to happen in America. And unless we get our own island that's unclaimed somewhere else, I really don't think there's anywhere in this world that's already established as another country that would actually, quote, allow that. But I do have that same mindset or thinking, like the brother was just talking about, that I don't think that that it's something we couldn't do in terms of our creativity and our abilities to succeed and overcome, because we've done it, and create and be prosperous. But it is that we are so wrapped up in this system worldwide, and we are so oppressed worldwide systematically that it does seem really impossible. And like we do have to learn to operate within the system that we're in, unfortunately.
To put it in perspective, Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world. Jeff Bezos is subject to the system.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Bezos is subject to the system. United States is the most powerful country for now, is the most powerful country in the world. It's subject to the system. So that's how, that's the magnitude of this thing. This dude, he said he cares not who makes the laws, the rules, or whatever of the country.
Right.
It just let me control their banking and their currency. That's why I said he is arguably the most smartest dude. And I don't know where he gets this from. But I actually been researching. I mean, we got a bunch of people in the queue. But real quick, I went back to go study. No, because it's money, right? Because it's like, where did you figure this? Who figured this out? There's an Italian.
I want to just mention that because they don't have the usury that we do and collect interest and all that. So there is a currency. There is a
Now, if it's in, if it's not in Russia, Cuba, or North Korea, it doesn't matter. They're in the. You're not understanding this. If they have to go somewhere, if they're in a place where they got to walk 2 miles for water and they have to use a plastic bucket, the polyurethane that went into that bucket, somebody had to pay for it and the money went back to the system.
Right.
They're wrapping themselves with some kind of textile fabric. Whoever paid for that, they're doing, you understand what I'm saying? These dudes done figured out everything. And in the country that they are in, there is a central bank. And like I said, it's a central bank everywhere. So all the money, whatever is floating around the government, you're jacked in the system. It ain't no way out. Well, listen, unless you were willing to go to war, that's the only thing. That's the only way. And then even if you, and if you're starting from now, if you're starting from zero, how do you go? How do you get the weapons? How do you rally the troops?
Exactly.
How do you feed and clothe the people you need? You need the money from out of the system. And once you get the, once you borrow, because of the way that he has the money set up, it's every dollar that comes into existence comes with a repayment of debt. This is why everybody is mad to all the money and the cryptocurrency and this. If it goes to cryptocurrency, well, guess what? America, if that becomes the currency, it's still going to be his, because that's the repayment. All those trillions, and it ain't just him. I mean, it's like a, you know, it's a family of them. There's probably about 13 of them. If any of you guys know about the Bilderberg Group and all of these people,
they are actually
on the second level, though. But they are the visible masters. They are on the visible masters. The Rothschild dude don't even be on the Forbes or nothing. But let's get to the other people.
Can I just say real quick, in terms of the institutionalized racism and the political part of it, the things that we can do and I feel need to do are seriously just show up. There is nothing stopping us from being involved politically in our communities.
We're way beyond that. All of that stuff, I believe 100% we can do it. That's why we have examples of the people who've done it.
Us really need to engage and do that and make that a priority, to realize that we have to become a part of the fabric that is creating these laws, period. And if we're not in it, if we're not in the juries, you know, other than, if we're not on the jury, but we're only the ones behind, you know, being on the stand, then we're not going to, if we're not making the laws or in the system on the other side, being judges and lawyers and senators and all of that, then the system is going to continue to make laws to our demise. They're not going to benefit us. But too many of us are not interested in politics. So in addition to STEM, I just think that we really need to get more people involved in the lawmaking in this country.
Okay.
So thank you.
All right. We have Sister Amanda in the queue. She didn't get a chance to speak tonight. Peace, Sister.
Oh, hello. Good night, everyone. I was listening to the conversation, and I agree with the person who said that we need to kind of like create our own system. And Brother Lou, you guys can hear me, right?
Yeah, everyone can. Yeah.
Okay. And Brother Lou, I understood what you were saying about the organization that exists right now, but a lot of times you're just regurgitating like the limitations on what we cannot do. That's the problem. We're trying to compete in a system that is already rigged and we're too far behind. So for us to try to feel like we could come up in this system is going to be a daunting task. So I feel like at this point, if we're all going to come together and do something, we have to go by our own standards. Maybe we don't want to be a millionaire. Maybe if everybody just has like a certain level that they want to get to. But if you want to be a Rothschild or if you want to be a Jeff Bezos, then that's when we're having a problem. And that's when we're going to always face this problem. Because
I'm trying to make the distinction. I want everyone to understand what we're talking about. When I say the system is above that, I'm not talking about I'm not talking about Jeff Bezos. Jeff Bezos is part of the system. America, the United States of America, is part. So let's say the biggest you could possibly be is a country, right? We could all agree. Like in terms of money, the biggest you can possibly be is a country. But the biggest country and the most powerful country in the world is part of the system, is what I'm trying to explain. The system is above everything. So I'm not saying that we can't. I'm not saying we can't carve out. I'm not saying we can't carve out our successes or anything. I'm not saying we can't do any of that. I'm not saying we can't do any of that. All of that is possible. When he said, why am I saying it's their system? Because that's how we got on this point. He was saying, he's saying that it's a self-limiting belief when I was saying, you know, it's their system and blah, blah, blah. They understand this game on a level that we do. I'm talking about in terms of commerce, in terms of mercantilism. They understand it on a level that we do not. They've been doing this since, I mean, I went back to like 800 AD. Right. Mm-hmm. So some of us right now, it's 2018. Some of us right now don't understand business. We don't understand stock, bonds, contracts. They had stock, bonds, contracts, insurance, shareholders. They had that stuff in 800 AD. 800. Mm-hmm. That's about 1,000 years ago. More than 1,000 years ago. 1,200 years ago. Do you understand what I'm saying?
You're from Brooklyn. I'm from Brooklyn. So you already know that within Brooklyn, there are dominant subcultures already there. You have the Russian community. It's not a whole country. It's the community that they have their own banking systems. They have their own underground stuff. Yes, they have to participate in the economy at a certain level, but it levels to this. You have the Asian community, the whole Chinatown. They have their own subculture. They have a whole underground banking system that you don't even know about. See, they wrote an article about it, but then now when I try to find it, I can't find it anymore.
It's not in the system.
Can I just finish my point for one second? I'm not trying to dispute what you're saying, but what I'm trying to say is they have a whole banking system that's not attached to the Chases in the Bank of America. Yes, there's people that participate in that, but they have their own banking system underground. Like, you don't even know. You can't even go find and get a loan, but they can. They will go to Chinatown. They will find out whoever it is that's running it, and they will get their loans, and that's how they do their business. Now, as far as us, the problem that we have is that we want to be too much in the system. We want to compete in a system that we know that the system is rigged against us. How many times do we know? How many times? So why do we continue to try to beat our head against a system that is already designed for us to fail, instead of coming out of the system slowly and building something else that we can have? Why do we have to have money to trade? Why do we have to have physical money? If I have something that you need, or you produce something that I need, why can't we just do that? And it doesn't have to be on this scale that you're talking about at first, but we could just start off, because I have talked with other people in other groups that they're ready. They're like ready to like just disconnect from the system. People are trying to go back to agriculture. They're trying to grow their own food. You can't grow everything, but if you could do a little bit more, make their own clothes. Like, we need to start doing stuff that we could if we give money every month, and you have all the members that you want, and you get the dollar amount that you want. Why do you want to go take the money and buy into the system where you could just take that money and we could produce our own situation? Yes, we may have to buy land. Yes, you may have to buy a building, but you have to start somewhere. And yes, you're going to have to pay taxes, but the thing about it is, you paying taxes, that's you paying into the system. Your customers and us, like as a people, only going to you to get this certain thing, that's our business. They can't tell me where I can get my products from, but they could tell you that just because I come to you to get my product that you got to pay taxes. So you pay your taxes, you pay, get the system correct. But as far as what I'm going to do is I'm going to come to you, get what I need, and that's how we got to do it. You know, I have properties. I rent to a lot of people, but some of the people that I do rent to are young, you know, young black people. They don't have, like, I will tell them, I say, listen, you know, I will take this payment, you break it up the way you need to, give it to me. You think other people is doing that for them? No, but I have to remind them that I will do this for you because I want to see you succeed. Am I going to go and do it for everybody? No, but if I'm going to do it for, you know, the people that I know that are trying, and this is my system. I know that they have their system where the management companies, if by the third day you don't pay your rent, you got to send them eviction notice, you got to do this, you got to do that, and then they be on their backs. But I don't do that. I take some of the system of that and I apply it, but I try to have my own system because I'm dealing with my own people and I want to deal with them in a different way than what we're used to. All of Rothschilds and stuff like that, they are way, like, so beyond us that we're never going to catch up trying to catch up to them. Now, I understand that they got their hand in all type of banking systems, but they don't have their hand in everything. They have
everything.
Their hand in...
That's the point. That's the point I'm trying to make. That's the point
at a higher level.
You got levels to it. No. That's what I'm trying to explain. And I'm realizing I'm probably, like, maybe I'm not communicating this effectively. Every single thing... When I say every single thing, I mean everything. I'm talking about garbage floating, the paper that wraps the straw, the little thing that twists your bread, every single thing. You know why? Because every single thing costs money. Every single dollar that comes into existence from a country that has a central bank, it comes in with a repayment to them. It comes in with a promise that you got to repay them with interest.
Do you know how much money?
Yes,
okay, so think about what you're saying.
Exactly.
Think about what you're saying.
Listen. This is why I say, you know what? We're here with family. This is not a conversation that people normally can grasp. And I'm not, because this is, you have to understand how the world works. You have to understand how economy works and all of this. And I am not going to have, like, that kind of discussion right now, right? Because I've been a student of this for 20, 30 some odd years. I live and breathe this. I understand a lot of people do not. It's okay. So if you're not wrapping your brain around it, that's fine. That's the reason why we're off the gold standard. That's the reason why we're on fiat money. That's the reason why they don't no longer need the gold, because the bonds that are owed to them just exceed whatever the amount of gold that they ever need. The IOUs, the paper, the bonds are good enough. That's good. It's good enough. It's a country, and they owe them. So, but like I said, I'm listening to what you're saying. But all of the things that you said are people's systems within the system, and all of that's possible. I'm talking about what they implemented in 1913. And anyone who doesn't understand what I'm saying, just go on YouTube. Like I said, go watch The Creature from Jekyll. It's a book, actually. So, I mean, I read the book, but they talk about that, but you can go look at the Federal Reserve. You can go and watch videos about what the Federal Reserve actually is in this country. It is not a federal entity. It's a private entity. You can look at when it was established. You can see why Donald Trump has a picture of Andrew Jackson in his office. He thought he was going to come in and kick the Fed out. And he found out, nah, you're not going to do that easy. And they reinstated it in 1913. In this country, they had it in England, and then they went around, and it's convoluted. It's the way that they do what they do is really, really interesting. But if you don't pay attention to world economies, if you're not into that, then you're not going to catch it, or you're not going to pay attention.
It's not even about me being into it, because I've been to school, I got an MBA, but then it's sometimes that you could be too into it that you miss the little stuff that you could do on your own instead of just worrying about, like, you know, you can't do it because they got this going on, that going on.
Okay. I'm not going to, because again, like I said, I normally don't even like to have these types of discussions. Actually, you know what, I'm going to, If anyone is talking about this, I'm going to just leave this alone. I'm not going to talk about this. I'm not going to talk about this topic. Brother Will.
Yeah, I just came back on. I wanted to tell Brother Bobby I really appreciate his concern and passion for our young brothers and sisters coming up out there. And, you know, it's not that we want, you know, we love them too. And, you know, when we use baggy pants as an example, and it's not that we're trying to side with a racist society, but what we're trying to do is make them aware of something that's stacked against them. And so when I say, well, they can't do what the white kids do, well, that's speaking from a point of reality. You know, what, you know, will get them killed, it may not get a white kid killed. You know, and if you don't really realize that, then I just don't know what to tell you, because this is the way our society operates. It's not good, and I know it's not fair, but for their protection, we have to make sure that they understand that. And so that's what we're really trying to get to. And as far as Brother George's point, you know, I understand that we'd love to be able to create a system of our own, you know, if we could do that, you know. But I don't think people really understand just how devious and how deep this thing is. You know, we get propagandized a lot in our media. You know, any country out there that ever tried to create a currency of their own that wasn't somehow tied to the system, we went to war.
Yep.
You know, when we talk about the United States, talk about the full faith and confidence of the United States, they're talking about we'll blow you up if you don't accept our money.
Yes.
Yep. Hey, that's basically what it's about.
Blow you up, install the bank anyway, and then rebuild your country and charge you, and now you owe us for the reconstruction.
Now you owe us money. There you go. And that's how it works. That's right. And on top of that, check this out. They're going to make money. If we were to start a war, say the United States was to start a war with Russia, the central bankers don't really care who wins. They're going to make money anyway. They're going to make money on both sides. They're going to sell them weapons. You know? So this is really a devious system that they have in place. And I don't think people really get the depths of it. But, you know, we're really not trying to do that. You know, what we're trying to do is get back to community, win back our community, protect our community, raise our community in a way that they can prosper and live in this society. Because when we talk about economic slaves, it's not just black people that are economic slaves. We're all economic slaves. All people are, unless they happen to be part of the very, very, very elite. But we're trying to say, in that system, operating in that system, we want to enjoy as much as possible the same things that others enjoy in that system. You know, we're on the bottom rung where we don't have any protection under the law. You know, people are getting killed, and the people that are killing are doing it with impunity. Well, we need to raise ourselves to a level that doesn't happen. Now, that system that we talk about, that big system that we're talking about, it's only going to change by catastrophe or some real world upheaval is going to take to remove that system. That's the bottom line. And we're really not talking about that right now. We're talking about bringing our neighborhoods, our communities up to a standard that they can go up and down the street without fear of being attacked by those people that are supposed to be law enforcement. We're talking about bringing our people up with a sense of pride and dignity that they feel like, well, you know, I'm a part of this society. I realize that I'm not going to – we're not trying to be Rothschilds or anything like that. Just trying to get our people to a point where we're not killing each other and we're not fair game for other people to kill us. So that's really all I really want to add.
Thank you so much.
I really appreciate all the comments tonight. I mean, there have been some excellent comments, like I said, Brother George, but Brother Bobby, Sister Maya. I mean, it's just really been a good conversation. But, you know, when we start talking about that deeper system. I mean, it's a little heavy. Okay.
Yeah, it's stuff. It's layers above it, or beyond it. However you want to look at it, there's other things in between we don't understand. Like they're talking this.
Yeah.
Right? It's
devious. It's very devious.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
No problem. God bless.
All right. Real quick, Sister Amanda was she jumped back in the queue. Her phone got disconnected. Real quick, guys, just to summarize what you were going to say, Sister. You got disconnected.
Oh, sorry, I got cut off. But no, but I just want to tell you that I agree with everything you say. It is bigger, but I feel like we'll have a better chance if we try to, like you said, fix our neighborhoods, do what we have to do, of course, but also be more self-sufficient. Lean towards self-sufficiency instead of trying to be better players in a system that's rigged against us. That's what I was trying to say. But thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sister. Okay, so now we got Sister. Oh wait, Sister Rhonda.
No,
I'm sorry. She. All right, so Brother Lawrence, you haven't spoken tonight. Brother Lawrence. Hello, brother.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for the all the commentary tonight. I'm very appreciative about the conversation, Brother Lou and Brother Will, regarding the systems. I'm not as familiar as you are, Brother Lou, regarding the overall system and the depths of it. I do have I'm more of the opinion that this broader system that everyone is tied to, that, what I'm getting from you is that, and I know you don't want to really keep dealing with this, but the only point I want to make is that although it may not be a system that anyone can be above today, and that is, devious. I heard someone talk about how devious the system is that came out of Jekyll Island. And I have a very shallow familiarity with what you're talking about, but I don't know the depths of it to really get into the conversation at the level that you're speaking of. But I think about how ideas are exchanged and traded. I kind of push back on the idea that any system that a man has created cannot be challenged at, I think the young lady, she talked about levels, and it happens over time, something that may not happen in our lifetimes, and it may take generations or even epochs. But I think that once, if there is a system out there that exists to the level that's so deep that we're all indebted to, no matter what we do in an economic sphere, that once is understood, that over time as people come to the understanding that they can create their own reality through community, through their own subsystems, that eventually it can be challenged and overcome. It obviously had a beginning. It wasn't something that was just there. I think you had even put a timestamp on it and also mm-hmm. discussed that there were certain countries that are not necessarily tied to the system and maybe to their detriment, the three countries that you had named. I think there were three of them. So, and there's the fact that I can definitely understand the fact that anyone who wants to one day as a group or a nation or whatever challenge such a system would require a military. That clearly makes a lot of sense to me. Anything that is that powerful in our world and has had such a dominance over such a span of time, anyone who challenges such a system, I think would have to be also willing to accept that the concept that it would come with a heavy cost, and the cost of war, because it would be protected with a military, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me. But to think it never can be done, I just think that, and I may be wrong in the message that I'm hearing from you, but somehow what I was hearing in there is that you can only be a part of it and sort of try to carve out what you want to be within such a system. You don't necessarily have to, you know, really be dictated to at all levels as a people once you understand the system that you are within. Like I said, my only pushback, if that is the message there, is that I can accept that today and that's just the way it is. But I do think it is sort of self-limiting to any group of people to think that there could never be a day where a system that a man has created could not be overcome by another group of men and women. And that's the only point I want to make with that.
And listen, and I agree, but you want to know what's so funny? The idea, that concept that you got in your head, it was taught to you by that system. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And I'm not joking. I'm not joking. The thing about it that's so brilliant about it, right? It's not a selfish system either. It's not. Look at Jeff Bezos. He's the richest man in the world. You can be rich. You can have a lot in this system. When you go and you research this, you're going to see, he's like, no, this is how you attract attention. This is how you attract enemies. This is how he said greed and avarice will be the downfall. You have to share. Our Federal Reserve system here in America is actually shared with who the richest guys at the time. So J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller, and all of these guys, it's shared. It's shared. He had his representative. He sent Paul Warburg, and he helped them establish. He actually helped them buy into a bank that was here so that they could have respectability, credibility here in America. And then he shared, and he implemented the system. So they have an interest in protecting the system. When you dig into it, I mean, you seem like a very intelligent brother. Just go and check it out, man. It's mind-blowing. It is really, really mind-blowing. And don't think that I don't spend time, I mean hours, sitting down trying to be like, well, how do you work around it? But wherever you start from right now today, you're going to need their money to do, or their resources. You're going to need their resources to get started. And then it's like, well, then how do you get a whole bunch of other people to see what you're saying, right? Because then you can't do it yourself. And how do you get a whole bunch of other people? Look at this. I'm sharing it right now. And look at the response. Look at the response. I can't rally you guys outside of that system. I can't rally no one outside of the system. I'm going to have to use the resources of the system to rally the troops. And then if I say, come with me, guys, I'm going to have to feed and clothe and all of this other stuff. I'm going to have to do all of that for you. And the only resources that are available that I know or that I have are based on that system. And then if you try to have land or any place or something like that here in America, then you know what that is. That's taxes. And they enforce that under threat of incarceration or death. And the tax code, right? Because that's their big stick. The IRS is their big stick. And they have something like the IRS in all these other countries. They have that big stick. And I think it's not even in the Constitution. Matter of fact, this country was founded on the fighting against taxes on tea. This country was founded fighting against taxes, and now they haven't implemented. So just do a little research. I mean, everybody on the call, if you never explored any of this stuff, just do some research. It's really big, but it's no reason for us to be, you know, it's no reason for us to feel like, you know, it's, you know, the things that we're facing are insurmountable. It's not. It's just one of the facets in the system. And that's why I have every faith that we can overcome it, because the people who really know what's going on, they don't care. They don't care. They're Jewish. It's Jewish people working with Anglo-Saxons and Germans and Chinese and other things. It's all different kinds of people there. no black people there, unfortunately, at sitting at that round table. It's like about 13 families. It's like 13 different entities. But we don't have any black representatives there. But there are Asians and all other kinds of people in that conglomerate or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, we can fare well in the system. We can fare well within the system, and then we can get a representative at the table. I don't know. But thank you, brother. I actually tried to reach out to you too, man. Did you get my email or my text?
I did. And thank you for that. Yeah, I did get that email.
All right, and so we'll touch bases behind the scenes, brother. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And so we have Brother Bobby in the queue, Brother Leon, Brother George, and then we are going to shut it down because it's 11:28. Go ahead, Brother Bobby.
Hello, and again, you guys can hear me, right?
Yes, we can.
Awesome. Again, thank you for a spirited debate. I originally called in to ask a question about sort of what you guys have been talking about, institutions. So I wanted to ask, how do we prevent what happened to Black Wall Street, to the Freedmen's Bank, to Gaddafi from happening to us? Should this venture be successful and we start to empower Black people economically in the way that you've described? But if I understand you correctly, you say you don't want to discuss that anymore. So I'll can that question, and maybe we can revisit it another time.
I'll tell you, in terms of Gaddafi, what happened was what Brother Will said. He rejected the system. He rejected the system. And so, and I'm talking about, and that the system that we are talking about, he rejected that one. In terms of Black Wall Street, that was part of those were conflicts within those are conflicts. So that it was not okay. That system. Because that
Wait
system
a minute.
Is not
let me,
racist.
Let me be clear about what my question is. I apologize for cutting you off, but my question was not what happened. My question is, how do we prevent that from happening here? So throughout the history of America and indeed throughout the history of the West in general, whenever there are movements or there are countries or even nations in the case of Gaddafi.
No, I get it.
Black people? Okay, so how do we prevent that from happening should this become successful? And so at some point I think it would be really good to delve into that.
I'm trying to make the distinction that there's two different facets, there's two separate facets at play. This is what I'm trying to explain to you. Racism is a profit generation, is a profit center of that system. That's what happened over there in Libya. That's what I'm saying. When they tried to implement, they're like, no, you're going to take the system. This happened in Iraq. It happened in Venezuela. It happened in Ecuador. It happened in Panama. That's what I'm saying. So they're dealing with the big system that's telling them you're going to take this, you're going to come in to the fold. What happened, like Black Wall Street and all that, that's racism that we're dealing with here in America, right? And so how this organization is structured, first in terms of us getting the ball rolling, right, because there needs to be a seed, there needs to be that seed investment. That's us having this distributed network, right? So, you know, we have brothers and sisters here from all across the country, and they all participated to create the seed. And once we create the seed, once we create the entity like the Community Resource Center or something like that, that's not a threatening entity. What I didn't go into on the call, and we usually go into it, we talk about how those entities are supported by business, right? So a lot of people come here and they're like, okay, cool, Black Wallace Matter is about black economics, black business, and things like that. We didn't really get into that because our end goal is, these community resource centers to actually change the cultural and economic and the trades, right? The ability, the skill set of our people. The American system, the loophole that the big system left was business, right? And that's what we don't understand. We don't play in that system the way that the other people do. Because if you notice, they have corporations and things like that taking on a personification under the 14th Amendment and things like that.
Right.
But once we start playing business the right way, once we start amassing power, once, as Sister Mai said, once we start playing the political game the right way, where we start on local levels and maybe move to a federal level or whatever, once we start hiring lawyers, lobbyists, politicians, have our advocates and things like that, if something like Black Wall Street occurs again, we are able to create a worldwide freaking uproar. And then we're able to go and start suing people and pretty much doing the same thing that the Jewish people do, and take money away from people, because that's the only recourse. So the big system is like, here's how you guys settle your differences. You know, you can either fight with war or you can fight with money. Once we have a big enough war chest to start going against some of these other little people and start taking money away from people, they will leave us alone. Once we start showing them that we understand the way how the game is played, they're going to be like, they're going to leave us alone. Because they leave the Jews alone, they leave the Latinos alone, they leave anybody who understands the game and play it the right way. Right? And we're not talking about little stupid racist people on Facebook or, you know, little, what they call them, lone wolf, you know, racist groups that might go out and, like, shoot up a church or something like that. We're talking about being attacked by the government or, you know, something that could really crush us. If we set the thing up the right way and we move according to the way that the game is played, which is through business and politics, then we're fine. We're fine. We just need
I agree with you, and I'm not completely sure that Black Wall Street, that was an act of just a lone wolf or the KKK. I don't know how you destroy a whole city of black people. It was just too complicated, but that's a discussion for some other time.
It was at the time. I mean, but yes, we can discuss that.
What I want to ask is, what are the next steps after we get, let's say, this organization raised its first $3 million. What are the next steps? What is the action plan? And then also, I just wanted to point out to revisit the very first question that you posed really quickly. In the 1994 crime bill, right, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, it had these provisions for mandatory minimums, and it was largely championed not only by the Clintons but also by black pastors and by the black caucus in Congress because of the crack epidemic, right? And so if we fast forward today where we see the opioid epidemic, and the meth epidemic, which are drugs that, you know, white people like more so, the response is, okay, let's give people mental health, let's not incarcerate people, let's make sure they have the tools they need to, like, coping tools as opposed to using drugs. So the response is different. The response is more humane, and I think that is the appropriate response. I also think that should have been the response for the crack epidemic, you know what I'm saying? And so when I talk about, you know, using the politics of respectability, I think that's a really good example because you had, and you can go on YouTube and find, you know, black preachers preaching against crack, and they were, like, really going hard in supporting this bill, and the results, well, we're still living with the aftermath today, right? We have this uneven incarceration, although it didn't start then, but it definitely, you know, increased the disparity. So when I talk about politics of respectability and not doing the work of white supremacy, I think that's a really good example. If there had been a more humane approach when crack cocaine was rampant throughout black communities, and, you know, the sort of idea, the Christian sort of values were not used to demonize and dehumanize black people who were struggling with substance abuse, maybe the outcome could have been a little bit different. Maybe there could have been a little bit more pushback against that bill. And the last thing I want to say just really quickly, I think it ties into what you were talking about, you know, thinking about larger systems and structures, and there was a lot of comments made about hip hop, very thoughtful comments, and I certainly appreciate them. And I just want to add something that Reverend Al Sharpton said. He said Jimmy Iovine, for hopefully you guys know him, he's a wealthy record producer and produces a lot of hip hop.
Yeah.
He said Jimmy Iovine has been the central figure and the common thread through over 10 years of manipulation and violence and death in and around the hip hop community. He said, and then he goes on to say, should the hip hop, the hands of hip hop, being a man who produced a song called Rock and Roll Nigger, and he gives some lyrics. Jimi Hendrix was a nigger, Jesus was a nigger, they're all rock and roll niggers. And Iovine produced this song back in 1978 for a white woman, Patti Smith. So if we're going to talk about systems, we also have to be cautious of, you know, calling out the systems in which sort of racist ideology operates, right? So there could be, and there are, according to this article, actually, you know, black rappers who come in with different types of music, but the music industry only gives a push to some of the more violent, disrespectful hip-hop music. So I think that there's a parallel there to thinking about the systems in which we all operate and, you know, sort of the things people do for survival. Not calling it right, not calling it wrong, just, you know, food for thought.
Okay. It's a good one. Oh, man, 11:39. All right, but listen, let me address, right? So I said if it's a good one, we'll go a little longer. The thing about the difference between the crack epidemic and the opioid epidemic, so I'm glad that you understand that there's a totally different response. You know, your assessment of it is that, you know, it's a more humane response and it's the appropriate response. Me right. knowing what I know about the crack epidemic, me knowing that we were purposely targeted and that was something that was maliciously implemented into our communities, and then knowing that, you know, that whole plan, that is exactly what Brother Will and I am saying. It's like, listen, you know they're not going to play fair. They okay. when we were hit with the crack epidemic, look what they did. First of all, they destroyed our families, and then on top of that, now you're locking the men up, right?
Absolutely.
And then right, and so what Brother Will and I am saying is when this stuff is happening, hey bro, how about you mind your P's and Q's? Because you know the game is skewed.
Can I please just respectfully interrupt really quickly? I agree with you 100%. We do not bring crack cocaine into our own communities. I agree with you. But can you also agree within that you can, that two things are not mutually exclusive, right? So you can push back against bad behavior or against unproductive behavior, however you want to judge it or label it. And at the same time, you can be respectful of someone's humanity, right? So even though the epidemic was, you know, sort of organized outside of the community and brought into the community, when you have black preachers pushing for harsher sentences, they are doing the work of white supremacy, right? So those two things are mutually exclusive. You can push back against bad behavior, and you can also acknowledge the humanity of black people and not do have a black mouth speaking white supremacist ideology, because
I noticed let me just tell you what happened on the call. Everyone, this is it kind of sort of got like that secret game when you tell one person something and then it just goes around and around, right? So everyone started having like different types of conversations based on the things that struck a chord with them. That was never my point. Because we keep talking about the bad behavior. What I mean by bad behavior, a systemized set, used the word that I probably should have used, dishonorable behavior, right? So, and I gave like, and I'm basically saying dishonoring the collective with stupid, ignorant behavior, like wilding out on a train or the bus, taking a video of World Star, sharing it on social media, knowing good and well these white folks already think we're animals or savages, and you guys are running around yelling, I'm savage, and you do something savage, right? And then someone who has a sense of mind, someone who's been down that road or whatever, pull them to the side and say, hey, yo, what are you doing? Or their mother or their brother or someone, and then having that accountability, just, you know, holding them accountable for that deplorable behavior. Now, the unfair treatment that happens as a result, whether it's the same activity that a white person would do or whatever, I'm not saying that's right. So I never said that, right? So you started talking about it, and I agreed, and it became an interesting discussion. But I don't want you to think that I'm saying that that's the appropriate response. All I'm saying is that the black folks, you need to know better, because we are not judged the same way, and we have to live by certain rules. That's how my mother would, that's how I was raised. You were raised differently, and that's how I'm able to respect the opinion, because you're able to articulate your opinion, you know, eloquently, and I appreciate that. But I don't share that. That you're right. I don't agree. It's not the same thing. But I don't want you to think that I'm misconstruing them and saying that the white supremacists, saying that we need to treat these children harshly, as a result of their bad behavior. That's mm-hmm. not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the child should have been checked before. The whether that's in the house, whether that's in the community, whatever it is, the child should have been, you know, my mom used to grab me by the ear and be like, listen here, you little fat faced boy, you better not go out there and embarrass me and this, that, and the third, because, you know, I'm greedy, right? You better not go there. You get the piece of chicken. You sit down. You do that. I better not see you over there asking for cake and this, this, and this, because my mother doesn't want people thinking that she doesn't feed me. Right. I would probably eat before I left, but I'm a fat-faced little boy. I want more cake. I want more chicken. So you learn those things. You learn how to carry yourself in public. And so what I'm realizing is when people see misbehavior in public, no one is checking these. No one is checking these people. I mean, even adults. This actually, when I wrote that thing, I was talking to someone about business, and we were like having a little group thing, and everything coming out of this brother's mouth was wrong. It was like, what? What are you doing? And you know, so it was we were making a proposal to clients. I'm a marketing consultant and web designer, right? So we're making a proposal. Everything he's saying is just wrong. Just wrong, wrong, wrong. I didn't address him in front of the clients because, you know, the people we were, the prospects, I didn't do that, right, because they were white. But you can believe, as soon as we got off that call, I was like, what is wrong with you? Either you don't know what you're talking about, so you shouldn't have been talking, or you didn't do your homework. Either way, what you said to these people was wrong. And all I tried to do was clean it up and go, well, it could be another way. I said, here's another option. I didn't make my brother look bad in front of them.
Right, yeah.
But I definitely held him accountable for misrepresenting what was possible.
Can I ask you, within the context that I gave, and maybe we should have this conversation, I don't know, you and I offline sometime. Do you think
Come back next week, man, and drop it on the floor, bro, because this is good. Man.
Do you think that the preachers who supported the 1994 crime bill that had these mandatory minimums and hearts and three strike rules for black, you know, people who were suffering from crack cocaine, do you think that they were wrong for supporting that, or were they right for saying
you mean like Charles Rangel, right? Charles Rangel and Al Sharpton? No, because see, their constituents were the older people who were like, listen, these people are breaking in my house, stealing my VCRs and doing all this. They were the older people who were witnessing the savagery, and they didn't know what to do. I was right in the middle of all of that. They calling them super predators at the age when they were calling those dudes. I was in that cohort. I'm Generation X. I was one of those young guys. I used to be packed up with my dudes, wilding out. I mean, I never was going crazy like how they were doing it on TV, but I was, quote unquote, labeled a super predator at that stage. I was a young black dude, used to be outside, pants, like I said, pants sagging, not only like when my butt is out, but I could have been in that. But, you know, like I said, the home training, my mother wouldn't, like my people, they just didn't play that. You're not going to be making us look crazy. You're not going to make the family comfortable. Right, and so and so those pastors are just representing the voice of the people that they represent, which were the older folks. They didn't know that they didn't know about the maliciousness or the booby traps that were hidden in those bills. They didn't know. And even Bill Clinton, like, apologizing for it now. He said, I didn't know. That's what he said.
Well, that's a lie, because he did know. He was lobbied by the police industry. They wanted these there because, I mean, you can't have, you know, jails and prisons unless you have people to fill the beds. But that's another – could you talk about what happens after the first $3 million? Like, what is the action plan?
Well, okay, so so what happened – you got to watch the blueprint, and I think you were invited on this call, so I, because to explain it, it's like 36 minutes, right? So we're not sitting here pulling stuff out of our behinds and just talking, right?
Yeah.
Right? Everything is well thought out. Essentially, you're looking at our business plan, right? So that's what that is. If you go and you look at the blueprint video, you'll see it, and it takes you from soup to nuts, A to Z. So there are steps that happen before the million, right? So it's like at 2,000 founding members, with the revenue we have from there, we are going to build a shopping portal. Actually, those are the two things that I'm focused on this year. I'm focused on building the shopping portal because we are the largest consumers in this country. And establishing the relationship with these companies that will allow us to get a kickback or a contribution whenever our people shop, and the discounts, and we're able to basically give our people like a cash back, right? Then the other thing is personal financial literacy and wealth building and business training. That's the Black Wall Street Project. Members of Black Wallets Matter are going to get that training, get those trainings, that information as part of the membership. But there are people who come here specifically looking for self-enrichment, looking for ways
right.
to take care of things in their own household. And, we're going to offer that information as well. And that's something that the current membership, that's something that we're building, like, right now as we speak.
Right.
So that's what happened.
That was actually my question. My question was, what is the action plan? Like, not what is the vision. I saw it. I watched the video. I love the video. And to me, that seems like a vision. But, like, what are the actual steps to make that a reality?
Right, yeah.
And maybe that's a discussion for another call because it's so late. But
No. It's not. It's actually a discussion that we have with the members. So if you're not a member, come on board, because you done stirred up the pot real good tonight, and you're insightful. Come on board. Then when we have our members, huh?
Don't blame that on me. I didn't stir up the pot. You asked.
You stirred up the pot. You stirred up the pot real good tonight, brother. Oh, and you held your own. Let me say, with an opposing opinion, you held your own quite well, brother. So touche. So
I just love
have a good
football. Whether they're struggling, whether they've made it, whether they're wherever they are, just love our people. That's it.
Right, and that's where we all have to start. We got two more brothers in the queue, and then we're gonna shut it down. Thank you so much for your contribution tonight, brother.
You're welcome.
Okay, brother George, and then brother Leon is gonna close it out. Yes, brother George. You stirred the pot as well, Brother George. You got to talk about expand your mind and all this.
You invited us into your home and served up the gumbo, bro.
Well, thank you. Thank you for contributing the sausage and the potatoes.
So I just want to put these out, and these are questions to think on, so we don't have to answer it. But the first question, I know you know the answer is, and it's this. How do you eat the elephant?
Okay, one bite at a time.
That's it. So when it comes to systems, when I asked that first question about system, I think everybody went way and looked at the whole elephant. I'm asking, can we create our own education system on Sundays when the church is taking all that money and take it to the white banks? Can we create an alternative system for churches to take all that money every Sunday and put it in black banks? Our own self-contained system. Can we create our own employment system? Because all our young brothers that are going and trying to go to these Eurocentric schools and graduate and think that they're going to go get jobs from Eurocentric employers, those times, that line has been drawn. So can we create our own self-contained employment system? And these are just things to think about. Because right now our mindset is we have to use the white man to make it. Now, within the format of the Black Wallet Matters, I'm 100% identifying with your strategy, carving out a niche, using what they've got, and getting some of that back. Totally on board with it. Don't see any philosophical problem with that. I just don't want that to be conflated with because there's no other game in town. I still believe that we come from greatness, greatness that we don't even realize where it comes from. That means there are no limitations. And if we decide to do something, it can get done. And that's the mindset I'm trying to inspire in our conversations, not to negate the reality of the current financial system as it is, because everything you're saying is right on point, but to accept that and internalize it as a limiting piece, to say, well, that's as far as we're going to go. I just want to gently challenge that, and that's all I wanted to end with.
Okay, well, I mean, but I think, I mean, you were one of the people at a time when I was saying, you know what, maybe we should make some tweaks to this and we should make some tweaks to that. And you're like, no, let's keep the plan the way that it is.
That's right. That's right.
Right. The plan the way that it is let's carve out our own within the existing
right.
system.
But
what I want people to understand, everyone that's on the call, what I want you to understand is no man is an island. And so that means even us as a group. What you have to do is you have to use the resources and things that are in the environment and use them to our betterment, because they built their system. When we're talking about the little system, we talk about this country. They built
right.
this country on our backs using our
right.
resources.
Right.
So it's only right that we pull back from everyone. If you look at the Asian community, they built their wealth on out, well, let's just say the Koreans on the hair care, from hair care.
Yeah.
They're building it on our backs. They're using our resources. If you
True.
Look at the Arabs with these corner stores, they're using our resources. They're building it. If you look at the Mexicans that came here and was like, they built it on agriculture. So they built it on their, they use their resources. It's an ecosystem. It's all symbiotic. If you're serious about making something happen, so
I 100% agree with what you're saying. So I don't.
I'm just saying, like, when we say our own, right?
Right.
When we say our own, it's one thing to say our own for pride. It's another thing to know. That just doesn't even make sense. That's not how it works. You have to know what we're talking about is economics. Economics, right? So economics is, like I said, it's an ecosystem. It's symbiotic because you have to take raw resources from other places, and then you have to turn it into a valuable product, service, good, or whatever it is you want to call it. You have to turn it into a widget, and then you have to sell it, right? So even if we say we want to have our own, right? Well, guess what? We have to get some kind of raw materials in. Right now, as it stands, we don't have any. And even if we do, let's say if we import some from Africa, well, then how do we manufacture it? How do we turn it? Right now, we're not big manufacturers of anything. And then on top of that, we're going to need electricity, and we're going to need all these other things that we currently do not possess, that we currently do not have. So it doesn't really make sense to just start saying, you know what, we're going to be closed off and walled off. It doesn't make sense.
But would it make sense to say, okay, let's take one system. Let's take education system, and let's make it a goal for our community that over the next, say, how many years we decide to do this project, that more and more children of our children will start going to Afrocentric educational experiences versus the Eurocentric one. Is that a feasible goal, in your opinion?
Right, but that's not the economics, though. That's cultural and educational. That's cultural and educational.
Just asking, is that something that you think is feasible and attainable if our community decided to go for that?
Yes, if our community decided to just create its own education and its own culture. Yeah, we can definitely do that. We absolutely can do that. But it has to be supported with economics. And then if you really want to say it's possible. That's possible. That's what I'm saying.
That's all I'm trying to do is, because even though I might be asking questions that might not be directly economics, it all comes under economics umbrella, because anything we do is going to require somebody's money.
But yes, exactly.
The reality of what is behind our problem, why we, in 2017 we are still operating where we're operating, is not because of a lack of resources. It's because we have a different mindset. It's a lack of confidence in who we are and what we can do. It's a lack of trust in, okay, I see you as a black businessman. I see you as a black man. It's all those mental things that we have been saddled with over generations that we have to start tuning into, because it's impacting the way we're thinking and treating each other.
It's when you mentioned the mental aspect, and there's been other people who come on board and were saying the mental thing, right? When you sent me over the information that you had, right, so it's like, all right, cool, I can't argue about it. But you know what I think? I think it just boils down to, if we had some money to go give a bunch of black folks some jobs, and we start putting food on their table, we can start telling them what they need. We can start telling them what we want to tell them. And the reason how I know this is because this is what I've done. I have maintenance crews that deal with my properties and stuff like that. One of the crews I had was young dude or whatever, and he was like, yo, man, I need a job. I need a shot. I said, what can you do? He said, I can do anything you need me to do. I said, so I needed someone to paint and caulk something at the time. He said, yeah, I can do that. And he went in, and I stood over him and watched him. He did it, and it was cool, right? And then I called him for another job. Now, this is the dude, he was hanging out, like, I think in front of the Chinese restaurant or something like that. Mm-hmm. When I start putting money in this dude's pocket, then I said, hey, listen, I need another guy. I need somebody else. You got some more guys? Yeah, I can get. So a little three-man crew. I was able to start telling these guys, listen, you know what? You need to kind of fall back with the getting high all the time. You need to fall back with this. Hey, man, you know what? Maybe you want to start going down here and, dealing with your remedial. I mean, going to go to these remedial courses, because I'm sending you information. I'm sending you over contracts. I'm sending you over things, and you're not understanding. So I don't know, how well you read or whatever. He didn't take offense. Walk up to his brother right now, tell him he don't read, he doesn't read too well, he's going to be offended. But because I was putting food on this brother's table, he followed what I was saying. And so I think it's just that simple, to be honest with you. But, I mean, you know, you're the professional. You're the professional.
No. Yeah. Listen, what you just said is exactly what I'm saying. You're thinking, hey, I just gave him a job. But you did more than that. You tapped into these guys. You didn't just took them up with opportunity, you gave them something from yourself. You start giving them some of your education. You formed a relationship. That's therapeutic. You don't have to go to school and get some initials to be therapeutic with somebody. Okay? It's that one has to go with the other for it to work. If you just give us resources and don't give us relationships, then based on our lack of knowledge, some of us are more resilient than others, but there'll be one in every few that, regardless of the circumstances, all they need is an inch, and they're going to make a mile out of it. But most of us are going to be under that big bell curve where when the stress hits us, we're going to act a fool. So you give us a bunch of money, and you don't tell us nothing. You don't have to create a relationship. We're pissed off or we're addicted. We're going to take them resources and go act crazy with them. So there has to be a mental component to go along with those resources.
Okay.
And
all
what
right,
you provide – and what you provided those guys was a mental component.
Okay. Thank you for psychoanalyzing what I did. I didn't know. I just thank you so much, brother. We got Brother Leon, and then we're going to shut it down, man. It's like 3 hours we've been going. All right.
Thank you, Brother George. Appreciate you.
Right on, man.
Brother Leon.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you can, brother.
Hey, like while I was listening, I just heard so much tonight, and I was concur with which I was just the conversation that you just had. But when y'all were talking, this is what I got. Okay, and just looking at where we are right now, we are. This I'm looking at it. Okay, our culture itself, or us as a black people, we're like a business. Okay, we are a unit. Okay, now this kind of way out there, but bear with me. Okay, with us being who we are today, 2018, as a race, okay, right now, our issues is basically of what we would have manifested through what we've been taught or been forced on us. So it's our mental capability, not capability, our mental response to things is what our issue is. So our culture is being a business. We are a business. The United States, okay, so with that being true, I mean, our culture is where we need to deal with it, and right now this program is dealing with the culture. So, it right now the thing that we have to look at is what's going on right now is we have to disrupt our culture. That's the way we think. Okay, so right now we have a culture. Right now the culture, unfortunately, the young people is the pants and things like that. But when you put it all in a nutshell, this is our culture. Okay, so now what we're doing with this project. We have a facility where right now we with all us collectively we have the opportunity to disrupt our culture. Okay, so what we're doing so I mean everybody now is inclusive because we recognize that our culture is the issue. We've been taught to do things certain ways, so we're doing that. So right now God has given us a program, okay, to whereas we can say collectively put our input in. And together, this program can disrupt our culture, the way we think. So I'm looking at that. So I'm gonna be working on that. But that's the key is recognizing that who we are and right where we are right now as a race. And right now, all we have to do is disrupt the way our thinking. And this project here is a tool that can do that because once we have one unit open. Okay, it's going to be like a seed, okay? You put the seed in the garden, the mustard seed, all of a sudden it grows. Next thing you got something that you can use. That child that eats that is going to get strength and knowledge. So we have what we need, but right now I just want to put the point out that right now we have to be in a position to recognize that we are a culture, but our culture needs to be disrupted, okay? And this tool and what we're doing right now tonight is a vehicle that can disrupt the way we think, the way we do things. Why? Because we give people options and choice because collectively we have knowledge, wisdom, and God has blessed us with a lot. But the first community resource center that opens, that's going to open up the doors, and then what's going to happen, we have the ability to open that state all over the country. So I just wanted to say that I saw that that's where we are right now. We're in a position where we have what we need because God has blessed us all with talent and knowledge. But the thing we have to recognize is to get it all going in one place and recognize that our culture is what needs to be disrupted. And then once that changes, we're in a position where we can use all the talents that we have, and we are fortunate now because we have a source, a community resource center that we can put together and build, and what that's going to do, that's going to give us the opportunity to put hospitals, schools, everything that we talked about tonight could come from that. Why? Somebody mentioned about church money. Somebody mentioned about employees. All that money could be filtered through the community center. So we have what we need, but the thing we need to recognize is that our culture is what the issue is. So as we come up with ways to disrupt our culture and funnel everything to the community center, it's going to grow. So I'm turning it back to you, Brother Lou.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's you nice summary, brother. And I want to thank everyone for participating on the call tonight, especially new active participants. Brother Bobby was very active on the call today. Brother George was very active as well as Brother Will and Sister Mai. So I want to just invite anyone who is on the call, but I think we're all family now. Once again, you know, just visit the website, check out the blueprint, see what we're about, and if it appeals to you, then consider becoming a member. And I will see you guys next week. Good night.